This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Maximum Achievement, the proven system of strategies and skills that will unlock your hidden powers to succeed. Here's the author, Brian Tracy.
The system you're about to learn can change your life. What follows is a unique synthesis of ideas, methods, and techniques brought together in one place for the first time. The individual components of this system are not new. They've been learned and relearned throughout all the ages of man. These principles and practices have been tested and proven by millions of men and women, and all great success is based on them. By integrating these ideas and methods into your daily life, you will feel happier, healthier, and more self-confident. You'll experience a greater sense of power, purpose, and self-direction. You'll be more positive, more focused, and more able to achieve your goals. You will get along better with the important people in your life. You'll be more successful in your career, and you will feel wonderful about yourself. You will learn how to unlock the great untapped reserves of potential that lie deep within you. You will put your whole life onto the high road of success, achievement, and greater happiness than perhaps you've ever known. To use a simple analogy, life is very much like a combination lock, only with more numbers. If you turn to the right numbers in the right sequence, the lock will open for you. It's not a miracle, nor does it depend on luck. It doesn't even matter who you are, as long as you have the right numbers. By the same token, there's a proper combination of thoughts and actions you can follow to accomplish almost anything you really want. And you can find that combination if you search for it. Health, wealth, happiness, success, and peace of mind are all amenable to the same principle. If you do the right things in the right way, you'll get the results you desire. If you can determine exactly what it is you want, you can find out how others have achieved it before you. If you then do the same things they've done, you'll get the same results they have. This secret of success is so simple that it's overlooked by most people. Whatever you want, you can have, if you want it badly enough, and if you're willing to persist long enough and hard enough in doing what others have done to accomplish similar things before you. It doesn't matter if you're young or old, male or female, black or white. It doesn't matter if you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth or if you came from a deprived background. Nature is neutral. She gives you back what you put in, no more and no less. There's an old fable that illustrates this point. Many years ago in ancient Greece, a traveler met an old man on the road and asked him how to get to Mount Olympus. The old man, who happened to be Socrates, replied by saying, "If you really want to get to Mount Olympus, just make sure that every step you take is in that direction." The moral of the story is simple. If you want to be successful and happy, make sure that your every thought and every action are taking you in that direction and not somewhere else. Sir Isaac Newton is generally considered to be the greatest scientist who ever lived. His breakthroughs in mathematics and physics and other areas laid the groundwork for the modern age. In his later years, he was asked how it was that he, one man, had managed to make such significant contributions to the world of science. He replied, "By thinking of nothing else." In its simplest terms, success begins with you exercising your power of choice and using it to take systematic, purposeful control over the thoughts you hold in your conscious mind. By rigorously disciplining yourself to think and talk only about what you want, and by refusing to dwell upon the things that you don't want, you begin your journey toward the stars. Most people spend their lives in a form of sleep. They go busily about their daily activities, almost totally preoccupied by a continuous stream of disorganized thought. You've experienced this phenomenon when you've gotten into your car and driven to work or across town, lost in thought, with almost no memory of the trip at all. Many of your habitual routines and conversations take place with a low level of awareness, almost as if you were in a mental fog, and with your having little or no recollection of the particular flow of events. Sometimes this preoccupation is deliberate. You use it to avoid thinking about parts of your life that you'd rather not confront or deal with. Sometimes it is simply automatic. You've been going through the motions for so long that your thought processes are unthinking. You only wake up temporarily when you are shocked or surprised, as when you're cut off in traffic or scared or caught off guard, but as soon as you recover your composure, you slip back into the warm, gentle stream of waking sleep, where your thoughts just flow past amid a continual collage of feelings and images. Now, to become all you can be, you must live more consciously. You must become more alert, more aware, and more awake. You must take more control over your thought processes so that you move in the direction of your own choosing rather than steering blindly on mental autopilot, as most people do. You begin the process of awakening by reflecting on your life, past, present, and future. As an exercise in awareness, start by imagining that before you were born, somewhere on the other side of the cosmos, you had evolved over many lifetimes to become a particular type of person with a particular set of qualities, interests, talents, and abilities. Now, it doesn't matter what you think about the idea of reincarnation. This exercise is just that. It's an exercise with a point that will become clear later. Continuing this line of thought, imagine that you deliberately chose your parents, that you chose the situation you were born into and brought up in. You did this because at your stage of personal growth and evolution, there were specific lessons about yourself, about life, and about other people that you had to learn, and which you could learn in no other way. Imagine also that the person you are today, especially the good qualities you've developed, evolved largely or partially as the result of the problems you've had with one or both of your parents. Here's an important question. If you learned that you had deliberately chosen your parents, and the person you are today has come about as a direct result of your choice, how would this discovery change your attitude toward your parents and the experiences of your childhood? Would you be more positive and accepting of them? Would you see yourself and your past experiences in a different light? Would you become more philosophical and objective toward what might have appeared up to now to have been a difficult time in your life? As you begin to think about this idea, about having deliberately chosen your parents, you begin to see possibilities that you had totally ignored up to now. Instead of seeing yourself as a passive agent or a victim caught up in circumstances beyond your control, you begin to see yourself as an active participant in your own evolution. Let's take this exercise a little further. Imagine that you are here on this earth to do something wonderful with your life, to become an exceptional person and to make an important contribution to your world. Imagine that this is all part of a great master plan that has been carefully designed with your best interest in mind, and that every event and circumstance of your life is an indispensable part of a big jigsaw puzzle, the outline of which you can only begin to see when you stand back and start to look at your life from a higher plane or a greater distance. Assume that whatever your current situation or difficulty, it is exactly what you require right now to teach you something that you need to know before you can continue on your upward journey. With this perspective, you can see that every experience is a positive experience if you choose to view it as an opportunity for growth and self-mastery. Now, project backward and with calmness, clarity, and a positive mental attitude, think about how every previous experience and situation of your life might have been sent to you at exactly the right time to teach you something you needed to learn so that you could continue moving toward the wonderful life that awaits you. Imagine that the events of your life could not have been otherwise than they were, especially if you were operating on autopilot most of the time. As you stand back and appreciate the incredibly complex interconnectedness of events that have brought you to where you are in life right now, you will begin to develop the perspective of the philosopher. You will begin to superimpose on your experience what is called a sense of coherence, an attitude and a feeling that your life is part of something greater than yourself and that everything fits together and happens for a reason. As you think of your life as a series of events and experiences that are conspiring toward your achieving some great goal or making some great contribution to mankind, you begin to develop a sense of destiny, the hallmark of potential greatness as a human being. Your job in taking control of your life and your future is to become the conductor of your own orchestra. You must take control of the internal and external aspects of your life and get them all playing in harmony around a central theme of your own choosing. Your job is to play beautiful music with your life and to make your life a great performance. You do this by keying in to the immutable mental laws of the universe. All real and lasting success comes from organizing your life in harmony with these general principles. The first law is the law of control. The law of control says that you feel positive about yourself to the degree to which you feel you are in control of your own life. You feel negative about yourself to the degree to which you feel you are not in control or that you're controlled by some external force or person or influence. You apply the law of control by choosing consciously to view yourself as an active, creative influence in your own life. When you take mental control, you place your hands firmly on the steering wheel of your own destiny. You become the architect of your own future. The second law is the law of cause and effect. This law says that for every effect in your life, there is a specific cause. Everything happens for a reason. There are no accidents. There are specific causes of success, and there are specific causes of failure. There are specific causes for happiness and for unhappiness. Whatever you sow, you will reap. Whatever you're reaping today is a result of what you've sown in the past. If you wish to reap a different harvest in any area of your life in the future, then you plant different seeds today. The third law is the law of belief. The law of belief says that whatever you believe with feeling becomes your reality. For example, if you absolutely believe that you are meant to be a great success in life, then no matter what happens, you will continue to press forward towards your goals. Nothing will stop you. On the other hand, if you believe that success is a matter of luck or accident, then you'll easily become discouraged and disappointed whenever things don't work out for you. Your beliefs set you up for either success or failure. You trigger the law of belief in your own life by accepting that your life and your experiences are leading you toward the accomplishment of something important. The more you believe this, the more likely it is to come true for you. Your beliefs do become your realities. The fourth law is the law of expectations. This law says that whatever you expect with confidence becomes your own self-fulfilling prophecy. What you get is not necessarily what you want in life, but what you expect. Successful men and women have an attitude of confident, positive self-expectancy. They expect to be successful. They expect to be liked. They expect to be happy in advance, and they're seldom disappointed. Unsuccessful people have an attitude of negative expectations, of cynicism and pessimism and negativity that somehow causes situations to work out exactly as they expected as well. You apply the law of expectations in your own life by confidently expecting to gain something worthwhile from everything that happens to you. Make your life into an adventure. Just imagine if you went around all day believing that something wonderful was about to happen to you. Think how much more positive, optimistic, and cheerful you'd be if you were absolutely convinced that everything was conspiring to make you happy and successful. Your expectations would quickly become self-fulfilling prophecies. The fifth law is the law of attraction. The law of attraction says that you are a living magnet. You invariably attract into your life people and situations in harmony with your dominant thoughts. Happy people seem to attract other happy people. A person with a prosperity consciousness seems to attract money-making ideas and opportunities. Optimistic, enthusiastic salespeople attract bigger and better customers. The law of attraction works everywhere, all the time. Everything you have in your life is because of the person you are. You can have more, be more, and do more because you can change the person you are. You can discipline yourself by keeping your thoughts on what you want and refusing to think about what you don't want. The more you think of yourself and your life as uniquely blessed and important, the more you attract to yourself the ideas, opportunities, and people that make your dreams come true. The sixth law is the law of correspondence. This law says that your outer world is a reflection of your inner world. Your outer world of relationships corresponds to the person you really are inside, your true inner personality. Your outer world of health corresponds to your inner attitudes of mind. Your outer world of income and financial achievement corresponds to your inner world of thought and preparation. Therefore, when you strive to see yourself as a special person put on this earth with a special purpose, your outer world of relationships, health, work, and material accomplishments will begin to reflect these inner attitudes of your mind. The seventh law is the law of subconscious activity. This law says that any idea or thought that you accept as true in your conscious mind will be accepted without question by your subconscious mind. Your subconscious will immediately begin working to bring it into your reality, making all your words, feelings, actions, and even your body language fit a pattern consistent with your dominant thoughts and your goals. The eighth law is the law of concentration. The law of concentration says that whatever you dwell upon grows. The more you think about something, the more it becomes part of your reality. More and more of your mental and emotional energies are devoted to bringing it into your life. You apply the law of concentration in your own life by dwelling continually on thoughts of courage, confidence, hope, love, and on the wonderful future that life has in store for you. Take time each day to sit and soak your mind in positive and uplifting thoughts, knowing that whatever you dwell upon long enough and hard enough will eventually materialize in the world around you. The ninth law is the law of substitution. The law of substitution says that your conscious mind can only hold one thought at a time and that you can substitute one thought for another. This crowding out principle allows you to deliberately replace a negative thought with a positive thought. Because of this law, you can take control of your emotional life. You can choose to think about something uplifting, like your goals, whenever you're faced with a situation that would normally upset you. You can stop talking and thinking about the problem and start talking and thinking about the solution. You can focus your mind on what can be done in the future rather than what has happened in the past. Remember, you can do anything you put your mind to. Your greatest need is to be patient, calm, and trusting. Whatever you want, wants you. Whatever you desire is moving toward you right now, just as you are moving toward it. Your primary job is to get out of your own way by applying these mental laws so that they work for you in every area of your life. Here's an action exercise for you. Take a sheet of paper and make a list of all the things that you want to see in your life. Write down everything: happiness, health, good friends, travel, prosperity, recognition. Let your imagination run freely. Now, here's the hard part. For the next 24 hours, think and talk only about the things on your list. See if you can get through one entire day without criticizing, condemning, complaining, or getting angry, upset, or worried about anything. See if you have the willpower and strength of character to think about only what you want for one whole day. This exercise will give you a real insight into where you are in your development, and it will also show you how far you have yet to go. The starting point of personal liberation is for you to accept complete responsibility for who you are and for everything that you become. You must accept without reservation that you are where you are and what you are because of yourself. If you want things to change, then you must change first. Because of the mental laws we just discussed, your thinking determines your attitude, your conduct, and your behavior, and they in turn largely determine your success or failure in life. You can dream big dreams, learn how to control both your conscious and subconscious mind, and improve your self-concept and performance. But none of these efforts will give you any lasting benefit until you embrace the concept of personal responsibility. When I was 20 years old, having failed out of high school, I was living in a tiny one-room apartment and working as a construction laborer in the middle of a very cold winter. I had almost no money. I was far from whatever home I'd had, and I wasn't planning to go back. One night, as I sat alone at my little kitchen table in my studio apartment, it suddenly dawned on me that everything that I would ever become was completely up to me. No one else was going to do it for me. That revelation suddenly opened my eyes. I had a flash of clarity. I was never completely the same again. During our formative years, yours and mine, it's normal and natural that our parents provide for us. The problems begin when people come into adulthood with the unconscious expectation that somewhere, somehow, someone else is still responsible for them and for their situation. But from the age of 18 onward, and sometimes earlier, you are in the driver's seat. You are the architect of your own destiny. Whether or not your parents have succeeded in raising you as a totally self-reliant individual, from that moment forward, there's no looking back. Everything you are, everything you become from then on, is up to you. In one of Tolstoy's short stories, he writes about a group of children who are told that the secret of happiness is hidden in the backyard of their home. They will be able to find it and possess it forever as long as they refrain from doing one thing. The one thing is they must not think about a white rabbit while they're searching for the secret. Now, each time the children go out to search for the secret, they try not to think about a white rabbit, but the harder they try, the more they think about a white rabbit, and of course, they never do find the secret of happiness. The point is that everyone has a white rabbit, and sometimes many white rabbits. These are the excuses that you use to avoid setting clear goals and making total commitments to the things you really want. Some of the most popular white rabbits that people use as excuses are self-limiting ideas such as, I'm too young, or I'm too old, or I don't have any money, or I don't have enough education, or I can't do it because of my boss, my children, my parents, or someone or something else. What are your personal white rabbits? What are your favorite excuses for not making the changes that you know are necessary if you're going to achieve your goals and fulfill your dreams? Go rabbit hunting in your own life. Root them out and run them down. Carefully analyze them to see if they have any validity. Here's a simple way to test your excuses. Ask yourself, is there anyone anywhere with my problem or limitation who has succeeded in spite of it? If the answer is yes, then you know that your excuse is not valid. What one person has done, someone else can do as well. The disease of excusitis is invariably fatal to success. If you have it, resolve to get over it right away before it sabotages all your hopes for success and achievement in life. The acceptance of complete responsibility, the giving up of your excuses, is not easy. It's one of the hardest things you'll ever attempt. That's why most people never do it. It's like making a parachute jump for the first time. It's both scary and exhilarating. When you cast free from your excuses, like leaping out of the plane, you suddenly feel completely alone, completely vulnerable. However, in a few moments, you start to feel a rush of excitement. Your heart starts pounding fast, and you feel remarkably happy and free. Self-responsibility is the core quality of the fully mature, fully functioning, self-actualizing individual. Superior men and women take both the credit and the blame for everything that happens to them. People who are failures take credit for their successes, but they blame their problems on bad luck or other people or circumstances beyond their control. Successful men and women have a strong sense of internal accountability, which extends to their work and to all of their relationships. Failures try to evade accountability at every turn. Sometimes I ask my seminar audiences the question, how many of you are self-employed? Usually fewer than 20% of the audience raise their hands. Then I point out to them that this is a trick question. I tell them that the biggest mistake a person can ever make is to think that he works for anyone else but himself. We are all self-employed, no matter who signs our paycheck. You are the president of your own personal services corporation. You are the boss. You are in charge. The top 3% in every field treat their company as though it belonged to them. They see themselves as self-employed. They act as if they own the place. When they refer to their company, they use words like we and our and my and us. The average employee, on the other hand, always refers to the company as though it were something separate and apart from him, as though it were just a job with no other meaning or significance. Now, there's a direct relationship between how much responsibility you are willing to accept for results and how high you rise in any organization of value. There's a direct relationship between your income, your status, your position, your level of prestige, and the recognition you receive on the one hand, and the amount of responsibility you are willing to accept without excuses for achieving the goals and objectives of your organization on the other. Here's an easy question. If you were an employer and you had two people working for you, one who treated the company as though it belonged to him and another who treated it as just a job, a place to go from 9 to 5 each day, Which of these two would you be most likely to promote? Which one would you want to invest in? To which of these would you give additional training? To which of these two would you give or create opportunities for advancement? I think the answer is obvious. The fully responsible person with an attitude of self-employment always finds the doors of opportunity opening for him or her. Most of us are plagued by negative emotions of all kinds, especially anger, fear, doubt, envy, resentment, irritability, impatience, intolerance, and guilt. In spite of our best intentions, these negative emotions tend to arise unexpectedly, often at the worst possible moments, and cause us to act in ways that we later regret. Now, negative emotions are feelings and responses that have been learned, like any other habit patterns. They can be unlearned as well. The most powerful and practical principle ever taught to build happiness, health, prosperity, and wonderful relationships with others is the law of forgiveness. The inability to forgive lies at the root of guilt, resentment, and most other negative emotions. Holding grudges and remaining angry toward people you feel have hurt you is the major cause of psychosomatic illness. To fulfill your potential, to develop your full mental capacities, and to liberate your emotional and spiritual energies, you absolutely must forgive everyone who has ever hurt you in any way. You must let go and walk away from your anger and your resentment. You must refuse to continue paying over and over for the same unfortunate experience. You must put your desire to live a good life, to develop a fine character, and to become an outstanding person higher than any negative emotion that you might still be holding toward any other person. Because your outer world reflects your true inner world, because you attract people and circumstances that harmonize with your dominant thoughts, because you become what you think about, your ability to forgive is the one indispensable quality you have to develop through practice if you sincerely want to be happy, healthy, and completely free. Now, there are four people in your life who you need to forgive to free yourself from negative feelings of guilt, inferiority, inadequacy, undeservingness, resentment, and anger. When you let these people go, you will experience a feeling of release and joy, and your life will begin to open up for you in a wonderful way. The first people you have to forgive are your parents. Whether or not they're living, you must decide today to freely forgive your parents for every single thing that they ever did that hurt you. You must forgive them for every injustice and for every act of unkindness or cruelty you feel they inflicted upon you. You must rise above the hurts of childhood and let them go, accepting that your parents did the very best they could with what they had. Many men and women in their 40s and 50s are still in a state of emotional distress because they have not yet forgiven their parents. A lifetime of resentment is a terrible price to pay for something about which nothing could have been done anyway. In many cases, your parents are not even aware of what it is they did that you're still upset about. Usually, they have no memory of it at all. If you tell them why you're still angry, they will often be astonished because they have no recollection of the event ever taking place. There are three ways that you can forgive your parents. First, and the easiest, is to forgive them in your heart. Each time you recall a hurtful experience, quickly cancel it by saying, "I forgive him or her for everything." The second way to forgive your parents is to go and see them personally or telephone them. Tell them why you're still angry. Then say, "I just want you to know that I forgive you for every mistake that you ever made bringing me up, and I love you." The third way to forgive your parents is to write them a letter in as much detail as you desire, forgiving them for every mistake they ever made. It's only when you forgive your parents completely that you become a fully functioning adult. Until then, you're still a child inside. You're still dependent on them emotionally. It's only when you let go of the unhappy experiences of growing up that you can have a mature relationship with your mother and father. For most people, the very best years of their lives with their parents begin on the day that they forgive their parents and put all the negatives of growing up behind them both. The second person that you have to forgive is everyone else. You have to unconditionally forgive every single person in your life who has ever hurt you in any way. You have to forgive every wicked, senseless, brainless, cruel thing that anybody has ever said or done or spoken about you, without exception. The refusal to forgive just one person can be in itself enough to undermine or even destroy your chances for future happiness. You don't have to like the person. You just have to forgive him or her. Forgiveness is a perfectly selfish act initially. It really has nothing to do with the other person. It has only to do with your own peace of mind, your own happiness, your own success, and your own future. Perhaps the dumbest thing in the world is for you still to be angry or resentful toward a person who doesn't care about you at all. As someone put it, "I never hold grudges. While you're holding a grudge, they're out dancing." Whatever the situation, you probably got yourself into it anyway. Whether it was a business deal, an investment, a job, or a relationship, you made the choices and decisions that made it possible in the first place. You were responsible. You were free to choose, and unfortunately, you chose inappropriately. Now, let it go. Even if you had nothing whatever to do with it, even if you were a completely innocent third party, you are still responsible for how you respond. You are in charge of yourself and your emotions. You are free to decide what you do from this moment onward. And the very best policy of all is to forgive. If you've been through a bad relationship or a bad marriage and you're still not over it, here is a technique that you can use to get yourself free. It is called simply the letter. The first thing you do is sit down and write the person a letter. This letter consists of three parts, which you may make as long or as short as you want. In the first part, you say, "I accept complete responsibility for our relationship. I got myself into it, and I have no excuses to offer." You refuse to justify how innocent and aggrieved you are, as you may have done in the past. In the second part of the letter, you write, "I forgive you for everything you ever did that hurt me in any way." Sometimes it's a good idea to spell out all the things that you forgive the other person for. In the last part of the letter, you end by saying, "I wish you well." Then, you take the letter, address it properly, put sufficient postage on it, take it down to the mailbox, and send it off. The instant that you let go of the letter and let it fall irretrievably into the mailbox, you will feel a sense of freedom and exhilaration that you cannot now imagine. At that moment, the relationship will be over, and you'll be ready to get on with the rest of your emotional life. Up to that moment, however, you remain trapped in the quicksand of the unresolved anger and resentment that attaches to any romantic relationship that doesn't work out. The third person that you have to forgive is yourself. You have to forgive yourself for every foolish or hurtful thing you have ever said or done. Remember, you are not perfect. You make mistakes. You say and do a lot of foolish things in the course of growing and maturing. If you had them to do over, you would have done them differently. But remorse and regret over previous mistakes serves no purpose. It is a sign of a weak character. Remorse is often used as an excuse for not moving ahead. All wise and mature men and women have made silly, foolish mistakes. That's how they became wise and mature in the first place. And now, you must forgive yourself for everything. If you've done anything to hurt someone else and you still feel badly about it, the fourth step is to go to him or her and apologize. Say, "I'm sorry." Repentance is good for the soul. It frees you from the feelings of guilt and unworthiness that go with the knowledge that you've done something that's not consistent with your highest ideals. It doesn't matter how the other person reacts or responds. All that matters is that you have had the courage and character to accept responsibility for your actions, to apologize and say that you're sorry. You can then get on with the rest of your life and let the other person get on with his or hers. Forgiveness is the key to the kingdom of mental and spiritual development. When you practice being a totally forgiving person, you are emulating the character traits of the greatest men and women who have ever walked the earth. You are putting yourself on the side of the angels. The act of forgiveness begins the process of washing away all the accumulated residue of guilt and anger and resentment that breed negative emotions in your subconscious. The regular practice of freely forgiving everyone for everything makes you a calmer, kinder, more compassionate, and optimistic human being. Your outer world corresponds to your inner world. What happens to you depends to a great degree on what is happening inside you. Your external experience is a reflection of your internal thought patterns. Over time, you create in your life the mental equivalent of your innermost convictions about yourself and what is possible for you. As I read story after story of famous men and women, and as I reflected on their biographies and autobiographies, I was struck by the common thread that ran through all of them. They all seemed to have or to develop an unshakable belief in their ability to overcome all obstacles and reach some great height. This belief or conviction seemed to give them powers not possessed by the ordinary person. They went on to accomplish remarkable things, often against overwhelming odds and in defiance of the predictions of people around them. When I left high school and began drifting from job to job, I had no central purpose or aim aside from somehow seeing the world. Like most people, I slipped into the reactive, responsive mode. I took whatever job came along. I associated with whoever happened to be around at the time. Instead of planning my life, I just reacted to my external environment and responded to my emotional and physical needs. I assumed that this was all there is. I came to accept unconsciously that what I knew and what I was doing constituted the upper limits of what was possible for me. The best I felt I could do was to react as intelligently and as constructively as possible and try not to make too many mistakes. When my studies in psychology, religion, and metaphysics mentioned the subconscious mind, I neither understood it very well nor did I attempt to use it to help me. However, the more I learned about the mental laws that govern our behavior and determine our results, the more I realized there was a hidden dimension of achievement that I was missing. The more I understood the importance of the self-concept and learned that everything we do on the outside is predetermined by our belief systems, the more I felt I was coming closer to the combination that would open the lock. Then I understood the meaning of human potential. If you and I are using only 10% or less of our potentials for effectiveness and achievement, the other 90% or more must be contained in mental powers we have not yet tapped. I concluded that, to get the most out of myself, I needed the access codes that would enable me to get into and harness these enormous capabilities. Your subconscious mind is enormously powerful. When you use it properly, it can help you to move more rapidly toward the achievement of your goals and desires than you ever dreamed possible. You can use your subconscious mind for creation or destruction, for good or for evil. You can be a prince or a pauper, depending on the way you operate it. To fulfill your potential, you must learn how to access it at will and use it for your purposes intelligently and constructively. Let me give you an example that illustrates this. My lawyer was showing me through his offices not long ago. He took me into the typing pool where there were several secretaries typing letters and legal documents. Each of the secretaries was hooked into a mini-computer that was available and accessible to all of them. As we left the room, he explained to me that he and his partners had spent more than $100,000 on this computer installation, which they had purchased about 2 years ago. He told me that when it was installed, all the secretaries working there at the time were given training in how to use the computer to increase the quantity and quality of legal work they could produce. Over time, he said, all of the original secretaries had left or gone on to other things. They were replaced one by one with legal secretaries who had no computer training. Because we're so busy, he said, no one has had a chance to go back and train these new secretaries on how to get the most out of our computer system. So now, instead of using this computer for advanced information and word processing, our secretaries simply use it as a glorified typewriter, typing one letter or one document at a time and spending many hours to produce what the mini-computer could produce in a few minutes. Unfortunately, most people are like those secretaries. They work every day with their minds, but they use their powerful mental computers for only the most rudimentary tasks, and then they wonder why their work is so hard and why they seem to produce so little. When I was washing dishes, I was convinced that the only way I could make more money was by working longer hours and by washing even more dishes. I eventually learned that the belief that you can only improve your life with longer hours and harder work leads you down a blind alley. The answer I found was to work smarter, to use more of my mental powers rather than my physical powers to achieve my goals. Successful people are those who have learned how to operate their conscious and subconscious minds in harmony, enabling them to get the things they want far faster and with much less effort. This discovery changed the focus of my efforts and the direction of my entire life. Your subconscious mind is like a huge memory bank. Its capacity is virtually unlimited. It permanently stores everything that ever happens to you. By the time you reach the age of 21, you've already permanently stored more than 100 times the contents of the entire Encyclopedia Britannica. Under hypnosis, people can often remember with perfect clarity events from 50 years before. Your unconscious memory is virtually perfect. It's your conscious recall that is suspect. The function of your subconscious mind is to store and retrieve data. Its job is to assure that you respond exactly the way that you are programmed, or the way you've programmed yourself. Your subconscious mind makes everything you say and do fit a pattern consistent with your self-concept, your master program. Your subconscious mind is subjective. It does not think or reason independently. It merely obeys the commands it receives from your conscious mind. Just as your conscious mind can be thought of as the gardener planting seeds, your subconscious mind can be thought of as the garden or fertile soil in which the seeds germinate and grow. Your conscious mind commands, and your subconscious mind obeys. Your subconscious mind is an unquestioning servant that works day and night to make your behaviors fit a pattern consistent with your emotionalized thoughts, hopes, and desires. Your subconscious mind grows either flowers or weeds in the garden of your life, whichever you plant by the mental equivalents you create. Your subconscious mind has what is called a homeostatic impulse. It keeps your body temperature at 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, just as it keeps you breathing regularly and your heart beating at a certain rate. Through your autonomic nervous system, it maintains a balance amongst the hundreds of chemicals in your billions of cells so that your entire physical machine functions in complete harmony most of the time. Your subconscious mind also practices homeostasis in your mental realm by keeping you thinking and acting in a manner consistent with what you've done and said in the past. All your habitual patterns of thinking and acting are stored in your subconscious mind. It is the seat of your habits. It has memorized all your comfort zones, and it works to keep you in them. Your subconscious mind causes you to feel emotionally and physically uncomfortable whenever you attempt to do anything new or different, or to change any of your established patterns of behavior. Your subconscious mind functions like a gyroscope or a homing beam, keeping you in balance and on track based on the data and instructions that you've previously programmed into it. You can feel your subconscious pulling you back toward your comfort zone each time you try something new. Even thinking about doing something different from what you're accustomed to will make you feel tense and uneasy. Applying for a new job, testing for a driver's license after several years, calling on new customers, taking up a new challenging assignment, or approaching a member of the opposite sex and feeling nervous or awkward, all are examples of your feeling out of your comfort zone. A major difference between leaders and also-rans is that superior men and women are always stretching themselves, pushing themselves out of their comfort zones. They're very aware of how quickly the comfort zone in any area becomes a rut. They know that complacency is the great enemy of creativity and future possibilities. So for you to grow, to get out of your comfort zone, you have to be willing to feel awkward and uncomfortable doing it the first few times. If it's worth doing well, it's worth doing poorly until you get a feel for it, until you develop a new comfort zone at a new, higher level of competence. If you aren't willing to face feeling clumsy and inadequate in sales, in management, in sports, in personal relationships, you'll get stuck at a low level of achievement. Your biggest battle is almost always with yourself, and your biggest challenge is in breaking free of your old habitual ways of thinking and acting. Here is a powerful technique you can use to program your subconscious mind. Imagine you go to a theater to see an exciting adventure movie. You arrive at the theater 10 minutes before the earlier scheduled movie is over. Instead of waiting in the lobby, however, you go into the theater, sit down, and watch the last 10 minutes of the movie. You see how the entire plot unfolds and how everything turns out for the principal actors. You see the problems resolved and what happens to everyone when the movie ends. Then, when the next showing begins, you go back and sit through the entire movie from the beginning. Only this time, instead of being caught up in the suspense and drama of the unfolding plot, you relax and watch the movie objectively. You take time to appreciate the cinematography, the dialogue, the way that the scenes are connected, and how the plot unfolds and develops. You are calm and relaxed. You are far less anxious or emotional than you would be if you had not already seen the last 10 minutes, because you already know how it ends. This is exactly the same method you use to program your new self-concept and your goals into the deeper levels of your subconscious mind, where they lock in and take on a power of their own. The emotional component is critical. It is the calm, confident, expectant, positive emotion combined with relaxation that activates your subconscious and brings about rapid change. This mental state, self-induced, is followed very quickly, sometimes instantaneously, by the physical manifestation of your desired result. Here's a 5-step process you can use to implement this method to help bring about any desired mental, emotional, or physical condition. Step 1. Verbalize and affirm your desired outcome. For example, if you're wrestling with a problem involving someone else, you could say, calmly and confidently, "This situation is resolved happily with good for all concerned." Your statement should be a clear description of your desired outcome or end state. Don't get wrapped up in detail. Don't worry about the process. Step 2. Visualize and clearly see the outcome you desire in this situation. See yourself and everyone else involved happy and at peace with the outcome. This will require effort and concentration. Step 3. Emotionalize your combined affirmation and visualization by creating the feeling that you will actually experience when everything is resolved happily. Imagine yourself already successful and the goal already attained. Step 4, and this is the catalyst in the process, release the situation completely. Just let it go as you would if someone you trusted said that he would take care of it and that you need not ever think of it again. And step 5 is realization, the appearance in your outer world of the solution. The realization or manifestation of your desire happens in direct proportion to which you have completely released all concern for the outcome and turned your mind to other things. As it says in the Bible, according to your faith, it is done unto you. Once more, the 5 steps to activating your subconscious mind using this method are: 1. Verbalization, articulating in words the desired outcome. 2. Visualization, creating a clear mental picture of what the outcome will look like. 3. Emotionalization, creating in yourself the feeling of satisfaction and pleasure that would accompany the resolved situation. 4. Releasing all concern while you turn your mind to other things. And finally, 5. Realization, or the appearance of the solution, the achievement of your goal. This attitude of calm, confident expectation that all will be well is an experience of higher consciousness. Religious people refer to this as prayer, and it is said that prayer is the highest form of affirmation. Ralph Waldo Trine called this state of consciousness being in tune with the infinite. It doesn't matter what you call it. All that matters is that it works with amazing reliability. The reason for this is because it activates your superconscious mind, which we'll discuss in a few minutes. The ability to set goals and to make plans for their accomplishment is the master skill of success. Developing this skill will do more to ensure your success than anything else you could ever do. In 25 years of study and experience, I've come to the conclusion that success equals goals, and all else is commentary. Intense goal orientation is an essential characteristic of all high-achieving men and women in every study, in every field. It's not possible to realize even a fraction of your potential until you have learned how to set and achieve goals as normally and as naturally as you brush your teeth or comb your hair in the morning. I was 23 years old before I first learned about goals. I knew they existed in sports, but the idea of mapping out my life using goals and plans had never occurred to me. It wasn't that I didn't have any goals, nor was it that I hadn't achieved any. I had already traveled 3/4 of the way around the world, including going from the west coast of the United States to Cape Town, South Africa, by land and sea, and then traveling from London to Singapore the same way. I had just never given any thought to the process of goal attainment. I had never realized that it is a specific procedure that I could use to accomplish amazing things. Like most people, I was moving randomly through life, reacting and responding rather than focusing and concentrating. Then I discovered goals, and I was never the same again. Goals are the fuel in the furnace of achievement. A person without goals is like a ship without a rudder, drifting aimlessly and always in danger of ending up on the rocks. A person with goals is like a ship with a rudder, guided by a captain with a map, a compass, a destination, sailing straight and true toward a port of his own choosing. It's a truism that each of us is achieving the goals we have set. You are where you are and what you are because you have decided to be there. Your thoughts, your actions, and your behaviors have gotten you to your present position in life, and they could have brought you to no other place, rightly considered. If your goal is to get through the day and then go home and watch television, you'll achieve it. If your goal is to be fit and healthy and to live a long life, then you'll achieve that too. And if your goal is to be financially independent or even wealthy, if that is truly your goal, then there's nothing that can stop you from reaching it sooner or later. Your only limitation is your desire. How badly do you want it? You are equipped with both a success mechanism and a failure mechanism. Your failure mechanism is your natural tendency to follow the path of least resistance, your impulse toward immediate gratification with little or no concern for the long-term consequences of your actions. Your failure mechanism operates automatically 24 hours per day. Every minute, every hour, it ticks away, and most people allow their desire for what is fun, easy, and convenient to determine most of what they do. However, you also have a success mechanism built into your brain. Your success mechanism can override your failure mechanism, and your success mechanism is triggered by a goal. The bigger your goal and the more intensely you desire it, the more likely you will be to exert your powers of self-discipline and willpower. The more capable you will be of making yourself do the things that you need to do to get where you want to go. The famous oil billionaire H.L. Hunt, who went bankrupt raising cotton in Arkansas and then went on to build a fortune of several $1 billion and become one of the world's richest men, was once asked his formula for success. He said that in America you only need two things to be successful. First, he said, decide exactly what it is you want. Most people never do that. Second, determine the price you're going to have to pay to get it, and then resolve to pay that price. The great weakness of most people is that even if they have some idea of what they want, they have never sat down and thought through what it will take to get it and whether or not they are willing to pay that price. We only know two things for certain about the price of success. First, in order to get whatever you desire, however you define it, you must pay the price in full. You must sow before you reap, and you may have to work a long time before you harvest the crop. Second, you have to pay the price in advance. Success is not like going to a restaurant where you can pay the bill after you've enjoyed the dinner. Any success that you desire requires payment in full, in advance, every single time. And how can you tell if you've paid the full price of success? That's easy. When you've paid the full price, the success will be there in front of you for all to see. It will happen by law, not by chance. When you've sown, you will reap. Cause and effect, action and reaction. The life you're enjoying today is a reflection of the price you've paid up to now. The greatest single enemy of your potential for greater success and achievement is your comfort zone. It's your tendency to get stuck in a rut and then to resist all change, even positive change, that would force you out of it. Everyone naturally fears and avoids change. We want things to stay the same, but simultaneously to get better. However, all growth, all progress, all advancement requires change. And change is inevitable. In spite of anything you do, life never goes on the same way for very long. It is always changing in one direction or the other. Things are either getting better for you or they're getting worse, but they never stay the same. The first benefit of goal setting is that goals allow you to control the direction of change in your life, assuring that change is predominantly positive and self-determined. People who do not have goals are doomed forever to work for those who do. You either work to achieve your own goals or you work to achieve someone else's goals. The best work of all, of course, is when you are achieving your own goals by helping others to achieve theirs. With everything that we know about goal setting, you would think that everyone would be doing it. You've probably been told for years that you have to have goals. You've been told that you have to be working towards your goals on a regular basis.